We had a number of sponsors very generously step forward to make this event possible. All the events with Rabbi Orlowick. Just want to mention that the session tonight is as a zechus for Refuah Shleima for Leil Chaim Ben Nava Fani, and it's also in memory of Eva Gal. And as Lezecha Nishmas Mar Yitzchak Ben Avraham. Tonight's refreshments, I don't know if they want me to thank them publicly, but I want to thank Mrs. Rachel Bistritz and Mrs. Abby Fox, who arranged refreshments, which are available in the back. It'll be a pleasure later on. Also, just want to bring your attention to the fact that this is the first public event of our Scholar in Residence program. You're all cordially invited to Tower 41 on Miami Beach tomorrow evening at 8:15, where Rabbi Orlowick's topic will be the function and use of speech and silence, essential keys to successful relationships. And there is a table outside with some more of the flyers. Over Shabbos and Friday night after the Seud at 9 p.m. at the North Miami Beach Kollel Zichron Mechel, Rabbi Orlowick will be speaking around 9 o'clock on keeping the connection to Hashem in an age of connectivity. And then Shabbos Day will be at the Yeshiva's other campus on Miami Gardens Drive. Rabbi Orlowick will be speaking after davening and Kiddush to the women on finding fulfillment in family life. Then we'll have a Shabbos Seuda together. You can still make reservations by seeing me before you leave tonight. And then will be a question and answer period at the Seuda, the whole time with Rabbi Orlowick. And then Shabbos Shudas after Mincha at Gilas Abba Shalom at Kaz starting at 4:45, and Rabbi Orlowick will speak then as well on the challenges and joys of raising today's children. Rabbi Orlowick will also be speaking at the Avos Avanim Shabbos at the Taras Chaim to the younger children and their fathers. It's a great schutz for me to introduce Rabbi Orlowick. I was struck this past Shabbos by the mention of a number of the sons of Yaakov in the brachos that Yaakov gave them, and there was a reference to certain greatness that was inherent in them. By Yehuda mentioned the greatness, by Shevet of Dan, Yosef, Binyamin. And Rashi, in each of those cases, made a specific reference to one descendant. In the case of Yehuda, it was David. In the case of Dan, it was Shimshon. In the case of Yosef, spoke in terms of the Benos Tzlachad. And for Binyamin, it was Shaul HaMelech. And it's an interesting idea that one individual can encapsulate the greatness of a forebearer, someone who came earlier. And in our generation, we can only read about a lot of the great people who came in previous generation, people who rebuilt Torah after World War II. And there are three people who I believe that Rabbi Orlowick is really an embodiment. There are three people who I think Rabbi Orlowick considers them amongst his main teachers. One was Rav Simcha Wasserman, Zatzal. One was Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Rav Shiva Torah Or, and Rav Chaim Friedlander, Zatzal as well. And I think that Rabbi Orlowick can be called an embodiment of the teachings of each of these three great men, and the manner in which he's able to give over and connect, be so down to earth, and to be so sincere. And at this time, it's a great tzchus for me and for all of us to hear a different Torah, bracha, and chizuk from Rabbi Orlowick.
Before and try your questions. At the end of this session, those who wish will have a boiled down outline of what I'm going to speak to you about. I will not be reading you a speech, okay? The original is 3 pages, okay? I'm going to put it in my pocket. And I will be referring to it to make sure I don't leave out anything essential. I have found from experience that when I give the handout before, you're actually the first people that I actually not giving out the handout before. Because you Jews, you just sit and read it and don't listen to me. Okay?
What's that? Don't praise too hard.
Okay. The subject is raising self-confident children. And it says secrets, so nothing here is a secret. And for sure won't be now. Why is it so important to have self-confident children? And let us not confuse self-confidence with arrogance. Arrogance is a terminal disease. Self-confidence is something we must have, especially today. You know, it's one of the axioms of capitalism that competition produces a better product. Okay? We can debate whether that's always true, but the reality is we have a lot of competition. If we want to raise children who will function morally, I came this morning to Miami Airport. I was the only person in the airport who's bringing in any food. I come to the place, yeah, it says food, I'm bringing food. Yeah? LL gave me two things of packages of cashews. And my wife makes me things that are good for me to eat, made out of oat flakes, water, a little bit of garlic powder, and a lot of love. And I take them around the world with me to eat. They're very good for me. Okay? If you're looking at a rabbi, Baruch Hashem, who's more or less healthy, it's because of her. But that's food. So I said, yes. And I knew what I was doing. I knew I was going to get that. JFK is much worse. But okay. So I'll have to pay. It's not good for my soul to make a false report. To say no. There is food. It's food. Yeah. I was the only one there. And I had nothing to declare that they were worried about. I don't care if you think I'm crazy. If I put this little black box on my head. I don't care if you think I'm crazy. I have to have enough confidence in myself and who I am and what I'm doing to be able to push back. We live under an ocean of air. Why aren't we pancakes? Because we're pushing back. Pushing back is not aggression or violence. Pushing back is the ability to say no. I like to have friends, but my self-worth is not based on society. So that's the subject. A self-confident child is someone who has antibodies, who can push back. And I just gave an example a few minutes ago, I think, that I was in Mexico City when I had the Mexican flu, and I came back to Israel, and I called up Dr. Schwab, a geriatric expert, and I said, Doc, should I take the flu shot? And since he is a walking encyclopedia, so if anyone knows him in Cleveland or St. Louis, Dr. William Schwab, and he says, yes, no. You, Rabbi Olowick, you have to sleep more. Because if you sleep, you build up the antibodies in your body. And that's really where health is. So that a self-confident child is someone who knows who they are, knows his or her limitations, knows his or her weaknesses, but I'm not going to allow an outside force push me around. And today, maybe more than ever, that we need that. When I was 18, which was a while ago, okay, I was born 82 years after the end of the Civil War. So since most people here don't remember American history, so you still have no idea how old I am. Okay? In order to see a film that I shouldn't look at, I had to get on a train, a subway in New York, which was taking your life into hand. There was a statistic in the 70s or 60s that a person living in New York City had a higher chance of being murdered, killed, than a Allied soldier on a Western Front in Europe in World War II. So you get on the train, and then you go to Times Square, which is even more dangerous. And then you have to show, you have to prove you're 18. And then you have to pay. I never did it. Baruch Hashem. Today, that's all you need to do. And kids who are not doing that, it never happened in history before. Never in history was such a great person. Were there such great children? Boys and girls who were saying no. When everything is okay, and everything is cheap, and everything, and they still say no, I can't hold a candle to them. Is this clear? And that children who have a point of reference, they have a home, they have parents, they have a school that they say, yes, that's my school. They're confident. That's the subject. Okay? Now, I want to give you a few principles that which we're going to base what we're saying. One is, people want something that they're missing. A person who has no money wants a job. A person who's sick just wants to get better. Children do not have power. You just take them around to where you want to take them. Or you make decisions, what school you're going to send them to, what they're going to have for lunch. So therefore, it is normal for a child to want to be able to make decisions. Okay? So if you want to produce a child who will be confident in his or her ability to make a decision, you're giving them something that they need. I was walking to the airplane last night in Tel Aviv with Rabbi Zev Lef. We just met. He was going to New York. And he said, I told him a vart. And he says, good. The Gemara says that when you say goodbye to someone, you should tell them something, a halacha, because that's how he'll remember you. You remember people, we love people at airports. Yeah? With this fellow Shakespeare said, parting is such sweet sorrow. People have heard of Shakespeare. You appreciate something you're about to lose. That's a sunset. It's besides being beautiful, the last rays of light. We appreciate things we're about to lose or things we have lost. It's basic human nature. A child will pull decision-making from your hands if you don't let him have it. You let him have it on your terms, not on his terms. We cannot fight humanity. When a two-year-old says, by myself, so sometimes you can't let him. You understand? He wants to cross the street by himself. It's illegal. In Israel, there was a kid, I remember two cases like that. One kid was, he was driving, this policeman saw a headless car. Yeah? Yeah? Straight out of James Fenimore Cooper. Headless car, just driving. The policeman finally, got the car off the road, and it turned out it was a little kid whose head was really much above the steering wheel. He got a hold of the mother, and the mother said to him, I promised him that if he'd be a good boy, I would let him drive. You want me to lie to my child? Okay? Like they say in New English, tantissimo. That's New English. Yeah? That's real stupid in Old English. Okay? A child, you give a child, what's chinuch? Chinuch is a consistent, constant, ongoing transfer of power and decision making from parent to child. Chayim, life. What does life mean? Can you hear me? No. What does life mean? Life means the ability to go on your own. The Maharal says, Mayim Chayim means water that replenishes itself. I want my child to go by on his own. Every parent wants their child to outlive them. I hope I'm not hurting anybody. A public speaker has to be really careful. There might be someone listening to this whose child did not outlive them. So I beg your forgiveness. It's frightening to be a speaker. But I want my child to, he's going to be on this planet without me. I want him to be able to make decisions on his own. He doesn't have to listen to me about everything, but at least he would know what I would say. At least consider what I would say. So you have to keep letting go. Children import their view of themselves from the outside. An adult says, I'm a person. You don't like me. It's a problem. You have a problem. It's not arrogance. Of course, if I understand that I'm correct, so then I'm fine. A child doesn't have that. A child, their entire essence is imported. Yeah, a child, I mean, I had a traumatic experience as a kid. I went to Los Angeles at 13 because I had lung problems. And they said to me, hey, you want water from the faucet? Water? Yeah, because they made fun of my New York accent. 2 years later, I came back and they said, you want some water? You like your water in the faucet? So like, you know, what do you hear? People pick up accents. Yeah? I, you know, it's amazing to see little kids in speaking English without an Israeli accent. That's amazing. I'm not used to that. Kids import the impressions of themselves from the outside. Okay? And the last point, one of the last points I want to make before we can get to our subject. We value effort. We value effort. The only thing we truly possess is how hard are we willing to try. There are people who have more native intelligence. There are people who have less native abilities. That's not the measure of a person. It's how hard did you work? If you have a child who gets 100 without working, he's in trouble. 80 with effort, that's terrific. Every person become great, but not great on a relative level. Children have different abilities. You run a race against no one in life. There was a British runner who kept breaking his records, and they said, why are you running for? I mean, you're breaking your own records. So he said, it doesn't matter to me how everyone else is doing. It's my personal best that matters. When a child knows that, he has control over his own success and will keep going up. A perfectionist, my definition of a perfectionist, is someone who cannot separate how good I am from how well I do. If I do well, I'm good. If I don't do well, I'm not good. No. It's the wrong planet. There's no perfection. I told Rav Zalig Plissken once, you know, the only thing perfect in the world is snowflakes. So he says, yes, but they melt quickly. Except on the North or South Pole, that has other problems. Okay? So please understand a child's sense of self-confidence and their ability to push back in life is going to be related to they consider themselves worthy, successful, capable people. People who are afraid of making mistakes. They can't move. They're paralyzed. Because if I make a mistake, means something's wrong with me. But that's not true. Okay? Okay. Now let's take a look at a few points before we get to particulars. How do you feel about your child? Do you feel he's capable or not? Now, if I believe that my child can, you know, climb a mountain, just run up a difficult mountain, it's not going to help. It might even be negative. Yeah? But within reason, I believe my child to be a capable person. And it makes a huge difference how I look at that child. A child who's born with a disability. I was recently met parents of someone who was severely handicapped. The kid's growing up fine. The child can't win the Olympics. The child has disabilities, has partial paralysis. There's all kinds of things that people could have. But that child feels confident, feels capable. I once came to a Shalom Zohar. Ashkenazim have the Friday night before a circumcision, they get together and they eat chickpeas and do other things. Yeah? I saw something was wrong. I saw there was something on his mind. So I stayed till the end and I said to Mickey, "What's the problem?" He said, "My son was born with 3 fingers on one hand." 20 years later, there was a lineup of boys after Friday night davening in Torah Or. This boy came and said, "Shalom Aleichem," with his 3 fingers. Parents did a good job. So he had only 3 fingers. Therefore, it means, well, if you're kind, so that means something about working in the Beis HaMikdash. Anything that requires 10 fingers you can't do. In Israel you probably can't become a fighter jet pilot. The requirements for that is that the psychological capabilities of a fighter plane pilot in Israel are very high. Okay? But they believe that the kid is okay. So it's technical and not emotional. So what you can do, what you can't do, you can't do. There's a guy in my neighborhood, he has a club foot. The foot is about that thick. Very thin foot. And he limps. He's such a happy person. Such a giving person. Yeah? I asked him once, "What's the secret? What did your parents do?" I said to him, "There used to be a thing called dishes." Yeah? Which if they fell or broke, yeah? She said to him, "Tzvika," his name is Tzvi, "Tzvika, you can't carry 10 plates, but you can carry one." There's a big rule in life, which I've mentioned a number of times today. You do the best you can and then you stop. But you have to do the best you can some of the time. Okay? This week's parsha, by definition of a rabbi, could connect anything to the weekly portion. Paro said, "Oh, you can do that amount? Now you got to do that every day." We can't. It's impossible. So you believe in your child. He's okay. Let them make mistakes. Are you a perfectionist? Can you deal with a few broken plates? Or, you know, some broken eggs on the floor? Can you deal with it? Because you could do a better job than your child can. So maybe do everything. My son, he should be well, had a boy about, I don't know, half a year ago, 3/4 of a year ago, he has 6 older sisters. I said, "This boy, please, he has 7 mothers, and they will do everything for him." It's trouble. He has to learn to do things on his own. What's going to happen to him? And he's going to expect his wife to do all the work of all 7 girls, for sure. He has to learn quickly that there's things he has to do also. Okay. So if you're a perfectionist, you cannot produce a self-confident child. Because everyone starts off imperfectly. Is that okay with you? Secondly, one of the big rules in parenting, is it for you or is it for him? Is it what he needs or what you need? I have this footnote in Raising Roses about the oldest girl in a large family. Yeah? Either her first is really her 14th and she's burnt out, or she knows exactly what to do and she's happy to do it. What's the difference? The difference is, did the mother press her into service because Shefala, I need your help. I just need your help. Or the mother was very happy to be a mother and she has a lot of work and she brought this child into the ruling coalition, which is the country I come from. It's a ruling coalition. And she consults her and it's her. What do you think? You know, you're the third sister under you. What do you think's on her mind? What do you think we could do to make her happy? And carefully consider what she says. You know, they sent this telescope. I think it was, you know, Haley, Hubble, the Hubble telescope. They sent it into space. Yeah? Why? It's a very expensive thing to do. The answer is, there's less interference. You get a much sharper image. A child will often see more than a parent will. And a child will often open up and speak to an older sibling than he will to a parent. It's a real thing. It's even brought down in the Torah about the honor you have to give to an older sibling. Yeah? Baruch Hashem, I have an older brother who still calls me kid. And that's very good for me. He's 77, yeah, and he says, a kid. I remember when Daddy brought you home, and I was about this big, 82 years after the end of the Civil War, okay? And he said, you take care of him. And he said, I haven't given up the job yet. It's so healthy for me for someone to call me kid. But it's true. It's really true. An older brother? Huh? Are you able to give positive feedback? Do you notice what's right? We are so good at catching people with what's wrong. There's a gra, the Vilna Gaon says, when a person got married, I guess right after the Sheva Brachas, so they would say, Matzah Oy Maitzeh. There's two verses in the Torah that have to deal with women. One is, I find a woman more bitter than death. And the other is Motza Isha Motza Taiv. You found a woman, you found something good. So the Vilna Gaon says, why is the bad wife or the less than perfect wife in present tense and the good wife is in past tense? So he said, people get used to good fortune and don't notice it anymore. I tell the Iranians in Los Angeles, if you ever get depressed, look at the sky and say, hey, that sky's over Los Angeles, not over Tehran. Do you understand? But we don't even notice that anymore. Misfortune is in present tense because we don't get used to it. We refuse to accept it. We notice what's wrong. Because what's wrong surprises us. It's not supposed to be that way. Good fortune, sure, it's supposed to be that way. We don't even notice it. You know, our teachers, our rabbis, did us a very great favor. They told us every morning to say thank you for having shoes. Thank you for seeing. Thank you for being able to see. Or else I would not. People don't. People won't notice it. It's a great gift. Wow. Because I could see. Now, I have a pair of glasses. I have an extra pair in my travel bag. And a pair of sunglasses. Clip-ons. Because I left my prescription sunglasses in America last time. So in Chile, yeah. So he came and he got clip-ons for my extra pair of glasses. Do you know what it means to lose these glasses? I'm a lucky man. I'm a rich man. I have three pairs of glasses here. So, notice what's right. Give positive feedback. We think education is catching people doing things wrong. It's quite the opposite. If a child doesn't speak properly, like, who teaches children how to speak? Mothers! So, a great secular educator named John Holt, he said, if you had to teach children to speak in school, they would never learn. Because first, You have to hold your tongue in the right place, right? And then you make a sound, th, b, yeah? And then you graduate to syllables. Resta, yeah? Be, leave. And then, finally, fifth grade, you have graduating class. I think the fifth grade is the graduating class here, right? And a few of the survivors will get up and say, run, Spot, run. And they will clap. Yeah? But mothers, you know what mothers do? They hear the kid says, wah, wah, wah. And she knows wah, wah is water. So she calls her mother up and says, Doug is talking. That's talking. It sure is. Because he said wah, wah, and he knew what he meant, and he got it. But like my Rebbe said, a child's like a new immigrant. A new immigrant comes to a country and starts behaving like everybody else. He will correct himself. Use the words in front of him. Don't say, no, no, David, it's water. Oh, no. Just repeat to him. Kids pick it up. And when he does something right, catch him doing things right. By the way, parenthetically, he said something else, this Mr. Holt. And it's very, very informative. He wanted to learn how to play the cello. It was important to him. But he lived in Boston, and it gets cold in the morning there in Boston, in the winter. Says there were some mornings he didn't get up for his cello lesson because it was more comfy under the covers. Listen to this line. He said that on the days I didn't get up for my cello lessons, I became temporarily disconnected from the rest of my life. Now, if we'll rabbinize this, an aveira is a disconnection from the rest of my life, which goes all the way to Olam Haba. This now is a disconnect. I'm just living in the present. Okay? So, yeah. But the point over here is, you kids learn. They learn from what's right. From role modeling. They pick up things. You have to correct them what they're doing wrong, reinforce what they're doing right. So, can you do that? So children will be confident, and if they made a mistake, again, it's technical and not emotional. People make mistakes, you know. One of the most... I have no problem saying I don't know. Why? Because my Rebbe used to say I don't know. But a teacher can't always say I don't know every day. It's like seven layer cake. Once in a while is okay, but not every day. A teacher says I don't know, teaching the child. That's okay to say I don't know. I remember when I was in fourth grade, I think it was. So the principal, Rabbi Eliezer Schwartz, Zecher Tzadik Levrocha, it was Nifta this year, 99. He came into the classroom and he asked me to translate a pasuk from Hebrew to Yiddish. So I told him I remember the English translation, but I forgot the Latin. I forgot the Yiddish. Okay? He says, what do you mean? You just remember the Yiddish, you don't know the English, you parrot? You got it mixed up. So I said, no, I remember the English. I told him what it means in English, but I forgot the Yiddish. You know what he did? He apologized to me. Now, when I was in fifth grade, that means I was 10 years old. That was 60 years ago. So if you don't know when the Civil War ended, okay? Yeah? I have no problems apologizing to anyone. Because if he can do it, and who's this big and really powerful, then it's not a sign of weakness. So I could do it also. When a parent says, I'm sorry, not every day. When a teacher says, I don't know, it's okay, it's a strength. A kid doesn't lose his sense of confidence or his sense of self. If he made a mistake, it's okay, he made a mistake. It's a subject in itself. How to get up again after a mistake. It's a subject in itself. But you need to know that when a person does make a mistake and is able to swallow it, and it's okay, and talk about trauma. I lost a spelling bee in fifth grade because I misspelled pneumonia. It's E-U-U-E. English is a very cruel language. It's anyone who has to learn it as a second language. You know? We have it in and in? Yeah? You have it in and in? It's push it, cruelty. Yeah? And no is spelled K-N-O-W. A kid broke down crying when he found out that two was spelled T-W-O. He just broke down. He thought he had to figure it out. Okay? It's all right not to know. But you have now developed the ability to have overcome a failure. That's like a person takes an inoculation. What's an inoculation? It's a way, it's a conflict. Yeah? Now going to introduce a bacteria, a virus, well, not a virus, a bacteria into your body, and you're going to have to, you may even get sick. But you will overcome it. It's given in a certain way, which is allows the body to overcome it. You've now learned how to overcome something. You have now learned that such a thing is getting up again. I know a kid, she's not a kid anymore, who had no childhood diseases at all. Yeah? She was terrified of childbirth. She had never had any pain. No tooth decay, nothing. A person learns. Yeah, it learns. It's controlled. A person gets up again. It's okay. It doesn't kill my confidence. I know someone who a person broke an engagement with her when she was 18. She was heartbroken, and she's now in her 60s. She's never gone out since then. What is this? She doesn't want the pain. I have no judgments. I have no judgments. But you overcome something. Okay? How much you put on a child is you have to take a good look at your child and see who are they. Do they have a tendency to being independent? You know, I know one parent said to his child who was getting hit in school, if you don't hit back, I'm going to hit you. The father said that. Now, I'm not saying that's what you should do. Okay? We don't push people into fights that they can't fight. So, is the child want this or he doesn't want it? Is it for you or is it for him? But as I said at the beginning, people, normal, healthy people, want to have control. I'm not a secular psychologist and I'm not well read at all in these things. But they showed that these things called mobiles, yeah? That you can, that they spin over the kid's head. An infant retained much more interest in a mobile they control than one that just free spun. People want to have input. You know, Rubber gave his children things to break. When a kid's breaking something, why is he breaking it? Because I want to show that I was here also. Okay, it's much easier to break things than build them, right? Okay. Make sure it's age appropriate. You don't expect a child to do more than is age appropriate unless for him that's age appropriate. But generally speaking, don't put kids in situations that are too much for them. Okay. Now there's a principle in change. In growth. Now, I'm going to give you my definition of growth. Growth is taking something you know intellectually to be true and making it part of your emotional reality. We live according to our emotional reality, not what we know in our heads. Anybody who smokes, so they have an intellectual reality, but it's not part of their emotional reality. Or else they wouldn't do that. It's called Vyadata Hayom Vashivos Elavavecha. What you know in your head, put into your heart. And this world is the emotional level of a person that determines who they are. Rachmana Liba Boy. Hashem wants our heart. Heart is the place of emotions. Rav Ovadia says, in the next world, it's on your ability to understand. Tzaddikim sit with their crowns on their heads. But in this world, which is the world of action, it's your emotional reality is going to determine your reaction. It's sort of like, who do you know? Not how much you know. It's true. The reason the Torah was given orally and retained its oral factor, till this day, the oral law is still oral. It got less and less oral. But why? Because the main reason was, I want you to know someone. I want you to know someone. It's not just the information. You can go to the Library of Congress and study all of this stuff. It's who you know. It's your emotional reality. That when the theory of evolution was taking the world by storm, sort of Naftali Amsterdam said, I understand, this guy must be right. The whole world says Darwin is right. It can't be. I knew Rabbi Saul Salanter. He was not descended from an ape. Understand? It's just, it can't be. There's certain things that it's because of who I know or what I've experienced. Someone who's at Yam Suf, someone who's at the splitting of the Red Sea, was not as great as Yecheskel HaNavi. But that experience is a whole different world. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's why we need a Rebbe. Because it's different. It's different. I can't explain that, but you experience it. I'll give you a seemingly secular example. I told the teachers, you have to create questions. That's not the way to say it. You have to put your questions down on paper. So I'm going to go to sleep for 90 seconds, and I did. Not deep slumber, but I was completely at peace. How do you do that? It helps to be exhausted. But then you can't come back. Yeah? Okay? You can't come back because you're out. There are places in the world where I've had peace. At that time, tonight I went to a certain mountaintop in Chile. Often it's the Pacific Coast Road in Los Angeles. I go there once a year and spend several hours there. You touch the sand, you feel the wind on your face. You listen to the ocean and smell the air. And just stop. Once you've memorized with all of your senses, you can go back there. You go back there. And you go back there. And then you stop. That's an emotional reality. 2 years ago, there was an ant walking through the sand. In January, I'm there myself. Pretty much, I'm there myself. And if any other people there, there's no problem with snares. Yeah? And they're running back and forth. This little ant has very thin legs. And it would walk on the sand, which is a very unstable element. And it would flip over. And it would its feet in the air. And would force itself back on. And then went a few steps further. Otra vez, another time. And it just kept going. You know what an experience that is? If you get engaged, you remember how you feel about him or her. Maybe seal those memories. This is experiential, it's emotion. If you do that, you can bring it back. You can bring it back. You listen to a song. Simchas Torah. Or at the end of Yom Kippur, where was I? What did I feel then? It's emotional. A person is able to integrate failure and getting up again. And it's who you know. So our emotional reality, we're able to grow from failure. We're able to grow from getting up again. Okay. Growth is slow. You change one thing at a time. I was in a place called Miami Beach. many years ago at a school, a certain school, won't mention his name. A third grade teacher asked me, I have a child in my class. He won't talk above a whisper, if at all. So what should I do? So I said, what do you want this kid to do? You want him to talk up in a loud voice to a question that he may not have the answer for in front of everyone. That's a lot of things at once. Maybe go over to him in the recess time and put your head down to his mouth and say, did you bring a snack today? Now, I don't know if they bring snacks here or not. Did you bring a snack? All he has to do is say yes or no. Then you graduate to a more difficult question. What did your mother send with you in the yard? And put your ears down to his mouth. He doesn't talk very loud. Then in the classroom, you stand next to his desk and ask him a question he knows the answer to. And he finds out that you asked him a question in the classroom. He answered. Wow. That's amazing. Growth is one thing at a time. One thing at a time. Okay? Don't give him too many tasks. Okay. Okay, let's go a little weiter. Now let's take a look slowly, quickly, and then we'll have a few minutes for questions. I take time very seriously. I remember in London, the rabbi said, how long to speak? So I did. He said, what'd you stop for? Of course, you told me to stop at that time. He said, but they all speak over time. That's why I told you that. Yeah? Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was once given a diet by a doctor. He came back and he was lost too much weight. He said, what happened? He said, I followed your diet. You followed my diet? It's like not normal, you know? So we have just a few minutes. Ask a child for his or her opinion about something that you can take their opinion. Give them choices that you can live with. Do you want to go to bed now or in 10 minutes? Now that's discipline. I'm not talking about that per se. You go to a market. What do you think we should buy for supper tonight? Should we buy this or this? What do you think? And they will think. You know why? Because they know that you're going to take their question seriously and that you will try. You don't have to, but you have to try and listen to them as much as possible. I'll give you another example. It just comes to mind. I'll tell you an amazing story. There was a kid in Israel who kept pushing the envelope, and eventually they had to send him abroad. Abroad, not specifying any countries. And this kid kept pushing the envelope. So they wanted to throw him out. This Haredi school wanted to throw him out. So it happens to be in the same city. There's a more modern school with very good teachers who teach real Torah. And it's the boys and girls are separate except during recess. Okay? So it's like having a siege around the city for like 20 hours a day. Yeah. So they meet at recess and at night, but it's not co-ed. You understand? And he wanted to go there. So they asked me if our pichinuch seems that this is right for him. But so should we do it? So I said to them, this is not a chinuch shaila, it's a halacha shaila. Are you allowed to spend money to send your child to a co-ed school? Without getting into any politics here. Okay? They went to their rav and he said, you cannot pay for a co-ed school, it's usher. They told the child changed immediately, adapted to where he was, and it turned around 180 degrees. Like, what happened? His entire life, he knew that the parents asked questions. And that means word was law in their house. Very great Jew. He just accepted that's the reality. If you take your child to ask questions, your child has a question. A halacha question, a question on the parsha. Take him to the Rav. We don't know. What's the halacha over here? David wants to do X. Is that okay? So if the Rav understands that perhaps, if he can, to tilt it in favor of the child. So the child is taught that my father asks questions. It's okay to ask questions. It's not a weakness. Like saying, I don't know, and apologizing. It's not a weakness. A kid learns that such a thing as asking a question. So one day he'll go and ask questions. And I know how to phrase a question. I know how to think about a question before I ask it. That's a person who can navigate life. He becomes self-confident. I once went to Rav Shlomo Volga as a bacher, whether I should go back to America or not. And I spent 2.5 hours to get to Be'er Yaakov, which was the roads then were like, yeah. And he says, go back to America. I had my hand on the doorknob, but I realized I'd forgotten to tell him something. I went back and I told him, and he said, don't go back to America. He has to ask the right question. Okay? Understand that this is a very important part of his life, and this is where we're going to finish. He must have the confidence to make decisions that may be wrong. It's okay. I'll end with a maaser that Dr. Tversky, Abraham Tversky, he ran a closed ward in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And one day a person comes to him and says, Doc, can I have a pass to go out? We're having a class reunion, and then we're not going to see each other again. We're going to the four corners of the earth. Can I go? Man, it was not dangerous. So he said, okay, I'll write you a permission slip. Dr. Tversky came back on Monday. And the guy said to him, you lied to me. You didn't give me a permission slip. Sure I did. Went to the nurse's station. He had put it in the wrong file in a closed ward that is dangerous. Because the nurse may say, you know, you can go. Wow, I'm getting out of here, you know, wow. I mean, he put it in the wrong file. He turned to this man and said, there's nothing I can say except I'm sorry, I made a mistake. This man made a rapid recovery after that. Because if Dr. Tversky is almost divine, and that ward can make a mistake, me too. So if you do make a mistake, terrific. Terrific. And it's okay. You have now inoculated your child with the ability to make a mistake. And it's all right. I can separate who I am from how well I do. Okay. I think that's... yeah? Are there any questions? Where are the papers?
Surprise.
Okay. While you're thinking, so perhaps, yes. As usual, there are more women here for another parents. Yes.
We're often told that children have certain windows of opportunities to teach them specific skills, for example, languages from, let's say, from the age of 1 to 5, reading.
I think it's 6 months is the window to speak it like a native.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you want to teach your child confidence, is there a specific window that you want to try to do that within?
I tell you, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not against psychologists because my wife is one. Yeah? Okay? But these developmental things, I don't know. Yeah? I do know there's a gene that has to do with languages. Some people are good at languages naturally and some are not. People in Israel say, well, I'll send my kids to school. They won't know any Hebrew, but everybody knows that kids pick up languages. It's a myth. Yeah? It's a myth. So it's a gene also. But I'm not qualified to answer about what the window is. I don't know. And I apologize for not knowing. Yes?
You said earlier this evening that, if I understood you correctly, that one of the things we want to do with our children is make them realize that they have to work to the best of their ability. However, in school certainly, and most of the time in the job market, you're working against a set of standards. So can you as a parent, what are your suggestions for us to be able to reconcile those things so that when the school says, you got to see, you need to be better, but you know your child's working to the best of their ability, as an example. How do you do that to build the confidence in them to keep going and not feel bad about it?
It's an amazing question. Let me repeat it. I stopped 17 seconds too early. Yeah? So now it's hitting 50. Yeah. The question was as follows. Yes, we know effort is the most important ingredient in the child's success. But the school is teaching him the opposite. You're getting a C, and you have to improve. And I used to say grades are degrading. Okay? I understand, but that's the way it is. There's reasons why school gives grades. Yeah? And that's the way it is. Yeah? The job market, etc. Yeah? There are things in life that your child is good at and can succeed in. What are you looking for when you want to look for panasa or success in any area, especially in the job market? You have to marry what's needed with what you're good at. Okay? I sent one female student to an aptitude test, Johnson O'Connor. This is a huge, have many branches all over the country. They're experts at aptitude tests. And this girl went there, and it came out very clear, this Beshakov girl should become a forest ranger. Okay? Or based on the scores. Or Abacha went to the same company, they couldn't evaluate his reasoning abilities. He was 10 years of Gemara, they couldn't measure it, it was too high. So he went with his mother, and they sat, and the mother said to their suggestors, but Orthodox Jews don't do this. So they said, we don't know anything about Orthodox Jews. Now there's a person in Passaic and a person in Lakewood who do aptitude tests geared to the social realities of B'nos Torah and B'nai Torah. They exist. But you're right. It's a, you know, the first 5 years of life is your child. The first 5 years of life, your chiyuv chinuch, is to make sure your wife is happy. Okay? That's the chinuch. If your wife's not happy, you're done. Okay? Every person has abilities and disabilities. And you have to make them as successful as possible in some area. In other areas, we could talk about effort. But you're right. If everything is a C, so then there's something you're missing. Because no one is a C in everything. But find it. Okay, someone here had their hand up. Yeah, because I just answered the white here first, because there's Kadima. Yeah.
There might be a tendency with a child to get a poor grade on a test and say, like, you know, you should have worked harder, you should have studied, whatever. If they get a 95, they say, what up, the chef? How do we instill in them the relationship and their success and their failure balance and their talking with the chef in both sides?
I tell you, when my kids came home with report cards, I'd look at the left side of the report card, and that's all that mattered. The other side, you got a 22 in Gemara, okay, it's technical, what can you do about it? It's what you broadcast to that kid. It's what you broadcast to the kid. It's what matters. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, shehakol nehyeh bedvarei.
What happens when...
I won't be able to hear you either.
Sorry, what happens when two parents see their child's abilities differently? One parent thinks that the child can do more than the other parent.
Right. What if parents see each other's child's abilities differently? Okay. First of all, it's not a direct answer to your question. Whatever differences of opinion you may have, the lack of shalom bias is much worse. A home has to be a safe place. There was a couple that came to speak to me. They wanted to buy an apartment in a certain area of Jerusalem. The price was, they could afford it. The floor was great. The kivunim, the directions. If you one day, a zeichet to buy an apartment in Jerusalem, which way the windows face makes a huge difference in the temperature in that apartment. Huge difference. So everything was perfect, except the mother, the wife, felt that where that house is situated, an Arab sniper on the old city walls can shoot into her salon, her living room. So I said to them, a home that's not safe is not a home that has a problem. It's not a home. Okay? So any disagreements, and kids have great antennas, okay? The disagreements between the spouses is technical and not emotional, even if there are differences in religion. Okay? Now, I'm a right-wing, reactionary, fanatic rabbi. Okay? That should be understood. Yeah? But I have not seen a marriage break up over Frumkeit, of a religion, unless it was something else also. I have a female student who married a rabbi who went off to Derech. And he finally paskin that he can't paskin her questions anymore. Because he's not Bikaris. Because he's a heretic. Okay? It happens. But it's the other way. It goes the other way also. This, you know, someone once came to Rav Shach. He was doing tshuva and he was above his wife in Jewishly, religiously, and he said she's not keeping up. So you know what Rav Shach said to him? You changed the rules. It's you one who changed the rules. What do you want from her? You hear? So it's, I have a 20-track mind. All the tracks run in the same direction. It's Hasso Tranquility, Sholem Bayis, Pazin Sukasa. Okay, just to make sure, I have 3.5 languages. Yeah? Okay? That now we can, in that background, maybe we can start to answer the question. First of all, how emotional is it? Or is there other areas where you're opposing and this really is being expressed in this way also? Yeah? If you truly want the child's best interest, you'll sit down and work it out. If you have to go to a counselor, it's not a problem. You have tooth decay, you go to a dentist. Okay? And usually the disagreements are not just based on that technical point. But sometimes a child, what about if one parent is more permissive and the other one is stricter? Then what do? You know, the kid knows, you know, that there are two honorable professions where you are paid to find loopholes. One is an accountant and the other is a lawyer. You're paid to find a loophole. So what do you have against a kid for finding loopholes? You understand? So yes, you have to have a good product. If you really believe in the child, it'll help. It'll help. Will the husband offset it by giving him candies whenever he wants, or doing this, or doing that? You know, you do the best you can. You do the best you can. It'll be all right. It'll be, if you believe in the kid, the husband will not, he believes less, but less. It's hard to find. A father who doesn't believe at all in his child is dangerous. But probably not the case. Thank you for coming.